Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, good afternoon. This is Blog Talk Radio, and this is Russ Johnson, and we want to get underway with another program and really get ready for the big programs that we're going to do in the future, especially next week. So let me see if I can contact Jillian and have some conversation with her in preparation for all of that. And so here we go. Let's see if we can reach her. And it's ringing, and it's ringing, and it's ringing. Hi there. Can you hear me? Hello? Let's do this. Hello, can you hear me? Let's try that again. Dial again. I clicked it off.
Hello.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes, I can. Yeah,
okay,
that was
good.
Strange. Something just came in and I just got an echo on nothing. But yeah, I can hear you.
No, I tried you a few minutes ago and I think I hit the wrong button. You know, one of those things. I haven't done this in quite some time.
Oh, yeah.
So what I want to do is get ready for. So next week, next Monday evening at your time, 5, my
yeah.
time, 7, right? 2 hours difference.
Yes.
Yeah, we want to get on AM, FM radio and on the internet simultaneously so people all across the world can hear you. How's that?
Right.
All right. So listen, what should we discuss next week? We want to discuss. I talked to the office and they sent me some material. And I see your picture here. Quite a lovely lady here. You were born in Yorkshire, England, the pupil of Edna May. Can you tell me more about Edna May? She was well-known Yorkshire clairvoyant. Can you talk about
yeah,
that?
Yeah, she was a Yorkshire clairvoyant. Well, she's been dead since 1982. What do you want me to say about her?
Oh,
I mean, the local people thought that she was a local witch. They were frightened of her. But she was actually a brilliant clairvoyant.
Okay, so have you been in touch with her since then, since she left?
Yes. So a year or two after she died.
She did what? I'm sorry. Can you hear me? Oh, so we have phone problems. Let me call you back.
I can hear you. Can you hear me? Yeah, I can hear you when you speak.
Yeah, you were breaking up just
yeah.
a bit, that's all. Just a bit, that's all.
Oh, okay.
But they say you were born clairvoyant. How do you know when a person is born to be clairvoyant? I mean, and what's the difference between, I should get a dictionary out, but clairvoyant and people who are psychic and people who tell the future and all of that stuff, what's the difference between those words?
Well, I would say a clairvoyant is literally somebody who has clear seeing. They can see things clearly. And this is past, present, future, this world, the next world, whatever. You can see, in other words, beyond that which is the everyday reality of all of us. And the difference between the clairvoyant and the psychic is that a psychic is really looking at the energy field around other people or other situations and getting the actual sensory awareness rather than a seeing. It's a subtle difference, but there's a difference there. Some people are incredibly good at looking at people psychically. You know, they can see on somebody's psychic field, their auric field, their whole history. Well, I'm not very good at doing that. It's not something that just happens to be the way I work. But I can see, I've always been able to see medically. So within the energy field of a person, I've always been able to see diseases, illnesses, potential illnesses. Diagnostics. I've always been good at medical diagnostics as a clairvoyant, because I could always see into bodies. And when I was young, I didn't understand that everybody was not like me. I must have been, I think, probably about 13 or 14 in high school when it finally hit me. And it came about, funnily enough, the awareness that I was different to other people, or different to most people, let's put it that way, when I was doing some mathematics, geometry. It was actually geometry. And we'd been set a geometry problem or series of problems, and I'd looked at the problems, worked out the answer, and written the answer down. And the teacher came to me and said, "But yes, these are the right answers." I actually got 99.9% out of 100 correct, right? So the answers were correct, but she insisted I showed her how I did it. You know, she show the working, show the proof of this answer. How did you get this answer? And I had no idea. I had no idea how I got the answer. I just looked at the problem and I knew the answer. And that was a big fuss in the school for me, because it pointed me out as different in the class, and I had to learn how to do this thing about taking everything very slowly and going step by step by step to explain what you were doing every step of the way. And I realized that not everybody was like that. Years later, I came to understand that the only real difference between somebody who sees clairvoyantly and somebody who doesn't is basically the speed at which your brain works in processing. It's kind of like how fast a processor you have in your brain. You know, your mind reaches out and your mind goes down timelines, past, present, future, whatever it is. But whatever your mind finds, your brain has to process so that you can understand it, so that you can speak it, so that you can say it. And so really, all you need is a very fast-moving brain, and that makes you clairvoyant. Because everybody has the capability.
You think?
Everybody has a mind. Well, absolutely. Everybody has a mind, right? And the mind has a limitless reach. The mind can stretch across the universe. But whatever the mind sees out there in the universe, it has to feed back into the brain to make it understandable to this sensory world that we live in, so that you can say what it is that you see, right? You have to be able to explain it. And that requires I've come to the conclusion that it just means some people have brains that run faster than others, kind of like computers, you know?
Of course. And do you think that's part of the way a person is raised and trained and I would say programmed in many instances? Because quite frankly, we all are programmed based on our circumstances, right? The information, our schools, our family, our community. Isn't that true?
Yes, that is true. That is true. That everybody has a degree of programming. But I hear this very much, and particularly today, when everything that's going on the planet today with the, you know, the whole political scene that's going on, and we're being told everybody's programmed, everybody is sheep, nobody's doing this. But what I think is missing from that conversation is a reminder that says, yes, but you do have choice. You always have choice. You do have free will. Human beings have free will. And therefore, what we experience is what we are choosing to experience. And so maybe those choices have taken a very long time to materialize. Maybe much of the unpleasantness, for example, that we are experiencing, say, at this time in history, is a result of the choices that we as humans living on and experiencing on Earth made these choices as a group of souls experiencing hundreds or thousands of years ago, and now it's all coming home to roost. So it's not, we make choices every minute of every day, all of us. And those choices determine whether we are retarded or advancing, whether we're going backwards or forwards in our development. And I would venture to say, based on something that Spirit once said to me, that those who have the skill of all the esoteric arts and all the brilliant things like the mathematicians and the people who can think outside the box, and I would put this clairvoyance in that category, clairvoyance like, you know, theoretical mathematicians, you can think outside the box. And anybody who can do that can do it because they have evolved to that level through many, many past lives, past experiences, that where they have learned things and moved forward and being responsible for their choices. They've made right choices, let's put it that way. They've made some right choices. And when they've made wrong choices, they've learned from them. So people who can think outside the box have always learned from past experience. That's what enables them to move beyond, because it's been there, done that. What can I think of next? So they're always moving forward. And that, I think, is what is missing for many people. It's not about the conditioning that they've had or the education or their environment, because no matter what the education is, you can be in the middle of it. I can remember very well, you know, I went to a standard English girls' school, as a grammar school, what you would call high school, all girls, very restricted, teachers all in their grey-haired old days. I mean, they were all pretty ancient. Half of them taught my mother. And so it was a very rigid sort of experience. And I would sit there in class and think, well, this is a load of old rubbish that they're teaching me. Or why am I bothering to learn this? Or do I need to know this? In other words, we can all question and we can all make choices based on our answers to ourselves.
All right. But most people are trained, if you will, in the school system from elementary school to middle school to high school to regurgitate the information that they have been taught. So at the end of it all, it's a matter of memorization rather than creative thinking. Aren't schools like that, kind of anachronistic? I mean, about 200 years, 300, 400 years in the back of everything else that's going on?
Yes, I agree.
Right. So how do we become more progressive in terms of the kind of thinking that
Well, basically, you have to get there. You have to get to that point. So let me put it in this way. Where I am a great believer in creative thinking, in thinking outside the box, and where I am saying, and I'm not reneging on this, that anybody who is classified either as a clairvoyant or a theoretical anything, theoretical scientist, researcher, whatever, all these people, and I include myself in there, we have this ability to think outside the box. We are creative thinkers, right? But I don't take away either the fact that in order to get to the point where you are capable of creative thinking, you don't have to have some solid groundwork. You have to learn to read and write. You have to learn to count and do mathematics and do basic numbers. It's really helpful if you learn some geography and some history. So the things that we actually learn in school are, in my opinion, necessary and not rigid enough. In fact, I mean, I was a problem to myself in school because I was already thinking outside the box and the school didn't move fast enough for me, let's put it that way. But the majority of people, and all of us really, we need that grounding. My one regret in life is that I didn't actually pay more attention in school and get a better academic education so that I could better understand what I learned later on. So I am very supportive of strict, quite rigid teaching of, you know, reading, writing, arithmetic, basic science, chemistry, physics, the fundamental subjects. I think kids should be made to learn these things. And I'm also, I'm very unpopular usually in believing that more time spent in the classroom and learning and less time playing out around on the ball field and going on school trips would be very beneficial to these kids because they were also learning a more rigid discipline. There's not much discipline in cheering for a sports team. So where I'm not against sports, I think the emphasis that we tend to put on it today is excessive and that there should be just as much or more emphasis on academic learning and appreciation for the clever kids, the ones who are working in the classroom. They should, they're, to me, they're just as much heroes as the ones who, you know, throw in the winning game or ball in the game or something. So I think that right now we've got a very, very confused view of what constitutes a good education. We honor, and this is just my opinion, and I'm sure it's not a popular one, but we, in my opinion, we honor very often the wrong people. We celebrate, you know, pop singers and sports celebrities and people doing extreme things out there rather than the ones who are doing the solid work.
Mm-hmm. So if you were to change the system, then you would put the emphasis on those people who are being creative in this, creative, if you will, in the sciences.
Well, no, across, I would put it across the board for education. Let me put it this way. The most highly paid teacher in the school would not be the football coach.
Oh, I see.
Which I understand is often the case today, right? I mean, I don't know if that's true, but that's what I hear, right? That the best paying job is to be the successful football coach. That's fine. You know, it's there's nothing wrong with that. It's very good, healthy exercise, at least for those who are playing. I don't know about the ones who are sitting watching, but I just think we have wrong emphasis or mistaken, misguided emphasis. And we're blaming the system for everything that's going wrong with our country, but and the world for that matter. But it's each individual's choice. Everybody can choose. As
right.
a parent, you can choose. Do you send your kids to the school because it has the best sports team and they happen to be good at football? Or do you send them to a school where they're going to get a really good education and do
mm-hmm.
something truly useful with their lives?
All right.
I mean, that's just an extreme. That's an extreme example, but it's the general idea.
But you were teaching metaphysics years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah,
okay.
I did. I offered some classes in metaphysics. Yes.
Okay. Have you seen it change the teaching of metaphysics by those people who are clairvoyant? Have you seen the change?
How do you mean? What changed?
The techniques and strategies and systems that were put in place to teach people to be clairvoyant.
Well, you're not really teaching somebody to be clairvoyant.
Oh,
clairvoyance
no?
is only... No, you're not. That's like saying you're teaching somebody... the purpose is not to make somebody clairvoyant. The purpose is not to teach that somebody can see auras or can... learn the art of becoming a healer, right? That's not the purpose. The purpose of teaching metaphysics is to share knowledge that you might have from a reliable source, let's say, or that you think is a reliable source, to share that knowledge with people who are interested in developing their own mind, in developing their own spirituality. And as their spirituality expands and grows and they grow, so with that spiritual growth, the attributes of being able to see auras, maybe do healing, be clairvoyant, these are frequencies that you move into as you evolve spiritually. They are like, this is the gift you get for doing the work on yourself. And that work is always about discipline. Always.
Mm-hmm.
All metaphysics is fundamentally a long, long road of learning self-discipline, self-mastery. And when you, as you make each step forward, other attributes come in as a result of being able to walk in that frequency.
Mm-hmm.
So somewhere in my history, as a clairvoyant, somewhere in my history, I must have walked through enough lives to be able to move into that clairvoyant frequency. And people, different people are good at different things.
Okay.
The same as, you know,
but
well,
the
same
average,
as we all can be different.
Oh, but the average person, I don't think, has any idea of what a clairvoyant does or feels in my training or understanding. I don't think they don't know what a clairvoyant or a psychic does, or a person who's talking about remote viewing. Have you done any remote viewing?
Well, being a clairvoyant is a form of remote viewing, except government-trained remote viewers cannot connect normally, cannot connect with the emotion of the situation. They can't become empathetic with it, nor can they usually understand the cause of the situation, which a clairvoyant can do, right? So but remote viewing in itself is just simply stretching your mind out to look at a situation that's at a distance from you. And if all you want to do is, you know, just go and look and say, okay, I'm going to put my mind out and I'm going to see if so-and-so's car is parked in their driveway, because if it is, then it means they're home and I can go over and visit. If that's remote viewing. It's a nothing thing to do. It's very easy, and it's very easy to teach. Anybody can learn to do that.
You keep saying
that's
it's
nothing
easy
to do with spirituality. Yeah, that's nothing to do with spirituality. That's just to do with getting control of your mind and learning to project your mind. That's a learned thing that is easy to teach and fairly easy to do.
It
just requires practice.
Practice, yeah. But so is discipline. Practice to discipline yourself, right? As I was reading your bio, it said that you talked to David, who is your personal guide. Can we talk about some of that?
Right. Sure.
What
do you want to say?
Well, how does one have a personal guide? Most people don't have a let's assume that people, all of us have a personal guide. Let's make that assumption, right? How do you tune into your personal guide? What kind of training would you offer people to tune into the personal guide that's
just
with you? Go ahead.
Teach basic meditation. You can pick up 1,000 little books on meditation. And if you learn to, even if you don't want to do any of the meditation practices as such, you can at least learn to sit quiet and shut up, right? Meaning shut your brain up. Stop thinking. Stop thinking about all the things you want to think about. They used to call it the Oxford quiet time. And it's just a process of going quiet. And when you go quiet, then you can hear what is being given to you. Now, it is a fine art to learn the difference between talking to your spirit guides and talking to yourself, right? You know, we can, but you have to learn to stop talking to yourself and listen to what is being given to you. But it's not something that I've ever been, what can I say? I did write a little bit meditation book. I called it Violet Flame and Other Meditations. About 25, 30 years ago, I wrote that little book to show people how to quickly develop a meditation technique. If you want to spend the next 20 years studying, you know, Zen or some Eastern meditation techniques, go for it if that's what you like to do. If you're like me, I have no patience for it. So first of all, I never taught meditation classes because I didn't do it myself, right? And I could count the times on one hand. I only actually sit and go into meditation mode when I really, really need something for somebody, right? If somebody needs help and I need to get them outside help, meaning from upstairs, you know, the guys upstairs, to do something for them, then I will take the time and trouble to meditate. But it's not something that comes easy to me because I am always in motion. I'm always busy. I'm always doing something. And it's not an easy thing for me to meditate. So when the people coming to classes with me asked about it, I finally had to sit down and write them a little book of instructions and say, okay, you know, here you are. And I handed these little books out. I said, right, now, here's your instructions. Get on with it. And there's a lot of, what can I say, charlatanism, maybe, about meditational things. Like, you know, these groups that do guided meditations. In fact, there is no, that's an oxymoron. There is no way you can be meditating when somebody is guiding the meditation, because what you're actually doing is listening to the person guiding the meditation. You're not meditating, right? So meditation requires stillness of the mind, stillness of the brain, and absolute quiet, interior silence. And when you, if you are really good at it, you can meditate in the middle of a, I don't know, a bus station. You can meditate anywhere, right? But only when you've mastered the art of being able to go silent within yourself. And then what's happening outside of you just is not there. It doesn't bother you. You don't hear it. You ignore it. So the other thing about meditation is that you need to have already, in my opinion, a firm discipline of yourself, of your energy, and of your belief structure, whatever that is. You need to be clear about it before you start going into deep meditation. Because in deep meditation, like clairvoyant mode, you're opening yourself up to many possibilities. And you don't know if you are not proficient in managing your energy, you don't know who you're contacting. So it's like, you know, you might say, well, this person's my guide, but you don't know who that guide is unless you've already reached that level of self-control, discipline, and ability to recognize what you're dealing with. It's not a game problem. You know, it's not for children. It's not for game playing. The old things about possession. You know, we should remember those old stories about possessions, because it's not a joke. It's a potential reality. There are a great many spirit beings out there who would love to get into somebody's head. And it's not, you need to open your mind very carefully, very carefully.
Okay. How do you know it's David talking to you from time to time?
Because I know him. I know his frequency. I know his energy. Every being, all of us, we have our own specific frequency. We're like the notes in a symphony. Everyone is different, right? And so when you know a being who is not on this planet at this time, whether they're on a UFO or another planet or just running around, you know, in spirit, you get to know their frequency. And I have known David for thousands of years, so I know his frequency very well. But interestingly enough, and this is where the caution comes in, well as I know him, and close as I have been with him for a long, long time, he has a brother who looks, well, they could almost be twins to look at. They look very, very much the same. And so if just the energy comes, like a holographic energy being or just an energy field, right? I am aware of that energy and I know, oh, that's David's energy. I know his brother's energy as well, right? But one time, because they used to turn up themselves, right? They would manifest a holographic image of themselves in my room, right? And one time, his brother came in his place and asked me something to work with him on something, and I did. And it was years, not years, but a long time afterwards before I realized he really conned me. That wasn't David at all. That was his brother. So even when we know somebody very well, we judge very much by appearance. And because he looked like him, I just took it that it was him, and it wasn't. It was his brother.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it wasn't, it didn't have a negative connotation, let me put it that way. It was not any bad thing. It was just a more or less a prank he was playing on me. But still,
right.
Anybody can be deceived. You have to be careful.
Okay. Let's talk about deception a wee bit. Right now we have what people are talking about, the Dracos and reptilians, and the reptilians have a ability to shapeshift, and that's going on all the time as we speak. That's confusing to a lot of people, would you say?
Yes, I would say it's very confusing.
Okay.
And I honestly don't know that much about it.
Okay.
I know the history. I know the history of the reptilians. I know that they came from a completely different universe at a time when there was a, how did David put it? He said to me one time, well, there was a glitch in heaven. That's how he put it, a glitch in heaven. In other words, there was some interruption of the electronic fields which separate one experience from another, right? And the reptilians apparently have their own universe, their own creation someplace else. And at some point, eons ago, there was this electronic glitch which allowed a group of them to move into our universe, and they established a base on the planet Draco, which is where we get the words, you know, draconian from, and evolved like many species do, very intelligent species, but they have a completely different value system to the human value system. They're a different, they truly are alien. Every other species, as far as I am aware, and obviously I'm not aware of everything, right? Nobody is. In as much as I am aware of all the different variations throughout our universe are members of the human race, except the reptilians. And the reptilians are true aliens who came from another location. They didn't belong in our universe. Our universe is specifically a human universe. It's designed for humans to experience in. And the reptilians are got here by mistake. But they are incredibly powerful beings, highly, highly intelligent, have been star travelers for a very long time and have been at war with the Anunnaki, who I do know about, have been at war with them for centuries because they tried to get down onto Earth.
Okay. But there are many, many, many people here on Earth, especially lately. You know, you have the UFOs and UAPs now that not only 60 Minutes in Australia, but in this country are talking about the possibility that there are other entities on planet Earth besides, quote unquote, the human being. Even the Pentagon has come up with some disclosures. Now, some people say that's a soft disclosure, but a lot of people don't believe that there are any at all. There are many people who believe that the only thing in the vastness of the universe happen to be the human beings that they see on a day-by-day basis. How do you handle that?
Well, we're back to where we started. Choice. Individual choice. Everybody has the ability to go online, if you like, or go to the library and get books and read and learn. But, you know, I have a friend who is highly religious, very, very religious, and devoted to what they believe. And because they believe that, right, they are incapable of believing anything else.
True.
And when I offered them some information, not spiritual information, not religious information, but archaeological information, right, that is extant on the planet today, literally carved in stone. And I offered this information and said, you know, this is nothing to do with religion, but I think you'll find it very interesting. And I thought they would. And when I inquired about it, they said, well, no, we never read the book you sent to us. And I said, why not? And they said, well, because we see that although it might be true, the photographs and things in it, you know, of buildings and so on, it might be true, it goes against what we believe. And we are staking our immortal souls on what we believe already. Therefore, we are not willing to take a chance on opening up to looking at some other possible information. In other words, they were afraid that despite the apparent depth of their belief, or faith, if you like, it didn't allow them to question anything, and they were afraid to question. They were afraid to say, well, maybe my religion is wrong. Maybe my belief structure is wrong. And I think that's true of thousands, millions.
There are hundreds of millions of people, probably billions of people,
right,
who will never,
right,
ever change because they are threatened to take on a new idea, which may upset and be in contrast at opposite ends of what they really believe. You understand that, right?
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely, okay. And I totally agree with you.
So if you got hundreds of thousands of people, maybe millions, hundreds of millions of people who won't change, what do you do about that?
Well, you wait. You simply wait. Life is endless, and all that is required is that an individual recognizes the possibility that they could be immortal beings, and therefore they want to claim that immortality. They want to claim their right. Now, if they deny, if they absolutely deny all possibility of a soul or a creative force of some kind which is unknown, or any possibility of spirituality, if they really absolutely 100% will only accept this material world and nothing beyond it, right? Well, then they're locking themselves in a box that they're going to find very difficult, if not impossible, to get out of when the cycle changes, when this time in human history ends, and it's coming to an end quickly, and the new cycle of time begins.
What do you mean by a new cycle?
Well, when we look at history, it's in times, right? There are times. There are times that we speak of, for instance, Roman times or Pharaonic times or pre-Christian times or AD times, or everything we experience in a three-dimensional reality has time as a component. The motion of it, the forward motion from point A to point B, is measured in time. And the universe has times when it's doing certain things. And soon, very soon, we are coming to the end of a time cycle for planet Earth and our whole solar system. In fact, this whole quadrant of the universe is realigning itself. And the time, this time for humans, has been very specific. It began on the Mound of David about 6,000 years ago, roughly, right? I can't give you an exact date, but somewhere about 6,000 years ago. This specific historic period for humans on Earth began when celestial time ended and humans were given self-rule through the king Adapa, right? The rulership of the planet was handed to King Adapa on the Mound of David in Jerusalem approximately 6,000 years ago. And that began the cycle of human time on this earth. And it comes to an end in 2 or 3 years. We end the cycle. And then a new cycle begins. A new way of measuring time begins. And actually, the changes, I think, are coming in August of this year. I think we're going to see massive change that's going to be earth-changing, and it will take 2 or 3 years to put it into play, and then the old time will end and a new time begins. And it's the way that we measure time. It's the way that we count time. It becomes a time. It becomes a noun rather than a descriptive word. And so we are coming to the end of this particular time, which has been a specific Earth-human time of self-rule. That's what it's been about, self-rulership of humans. And you see the mess we've made. I mean, we've made a real mess on the planet. So we're running into a period of cleanup.
It is interesting, may I say. But when you say 6,000 years, there are people who do have religions, constructs, historically, and they would disagree that with your 6,000-year history, they would say it hasn't been 6,000 years that people have been on this planet, you know.
No, that's nonsense. There have been people on this planet for millions of years.
Okay,
and civilizations have risen and reached high levels of development. Look at Atlantis, Lemuria. Very highly developed. Where did they all go? Right? They were a civilization on this planet, and it went down, and that's happened many times. This is different, though, this time. This is a different situation. And I think, you know, the greater the potential for good, the more possibility for evil, because good is like light. It's like bright light shining, something that's good, that's golden, you know, it's like a brilliant light shining. And what happens when you put a brilliant light out there, it attracts all the rubbish, right? All the darkness. You know, like when you hang a lantern out on your deck in summer, and in the evening, all the bugs come to the lantern, right? They all come swarming. So we are seeing a high level of the development of good on this planet through this last 50, 60 years. And what it has generated is more evil than this planet has ever seen in its history.
Uh-huh. So you think it's getting worse rather than better. How about when we look at the Bible and talk about Sodom and Gomorrah? What can you reference that to? What, in your estimation, in terms of historical development, does all that mean? Are we in those kind of times?
Well, but yes, I would say that we are, except everywhere is like Sodom and Gomorrah these days. You know, it's all, the whole planet is in a bad place. And scattered about, have you ever flown over America at night? And you look down and there are some black, dark places where there's no light at all. And then there are all the other lights that you see scattered about everywhere, shining up out of the blackness. It always fascinates me to fly at night because you see all these lights from the people in the cities below. Well, that's kind of the way it is right now on the planet. You have these pockets of shining goodness, absolute shining goodness, coming from individuals and collectives of individuals banding together to generate this life force, this energy, which is pure light. And the brighter they shine, the darker the darkness is, the stronger the evil becomes, in a way, in contrast. So right now we're seeing more and more atrocities, more and more evil on the planet. But we also have this thing among humans that we are very self-deceptive. And so when something is something that is convenient to us, something that makes life easy for most of us, then we turn a blind eye to the evil maybe that is behind it. We don't want to, what's that phrase? Don't rock the boat, right? And
right.
Most people go through their lives not wanting to rock the boat. So these sort of dark patches of evil build up and fester and have done on this planet for a long, long time. And of course, the easiest way to refer to it in the Western world, for instance, and especially in America, is what I believe it was Eisenhower, who warned us about the military-industrial complex, right? Which in itself sounds like a good thing. You know, let's develop our industry, let's develop our military capability as a peacekeeping force, let's do all these wonderful things. But in reality, the military-industrial complex, and I want to throw Big Pharma in there particularly, has actually taken control of our world and taken slowly eroded our freedoms. And that is even worse in Europe. We in America, I think, are still a bastion of freedom where people will stand up and say no. We're not having this, and we will put our foot down and say enough, no more. And I think that is happening at a grassroots level, certainly in all the Western states. You know, we're standing up, and I want to do a big shout out to that lady governor in, I believe is in Wyoming, was it, who would not do anything about COVID. She didn't obey any of the rules whatsoever. And they had the least problem with COVID than almost any state in the union. And because she wouldn't shut her state down, she said, absolutely not. And don't care what the federal government thinks, we're not doing it. So there are places where people are willing to stand up for what they believe is right and to protect their freedom. But it's not like that in Europe. And this is why it's going to be extremely difficult to get anything that represents justice or fairness or fair play across the whole of the planet. I think it would be impossible to do it if we stay the way we are now. In fact, I know it would, simply because the whole of Europe is already so lacking in freedom, so used to doing what the government tells them all of the time, that they don't even know what freedom is anymore. I still have friends and relatives back in the UK, in England, where I came from, obviously. And when I talk to them and say the things that, you know, here in Montana, the things that we are standing up for, and or we are demanding our governor does, or, you know, refusing his mask mandate when the COVID thing was going on, they are shocked. They cannot comprehend why it is necessary to stand up for freedom. But as they say, freedom is not free, and we need to stand up for it. If the human race wants to continue as a free species, able to exercise free will, then they're going to have to claim that freedom. And that is in part a measure of their spiritual growth, right? Because if you are not thinking about your spiritual self, you are then only thinking